Welcome to SLP Nerdcast. I'm Kate.
And I'm Amy, and we appreciate you tuning in. In our podcast, we review and provide commentary on resources, literature, and we discuss issues related to the field of speech-language pathology.
You can use this podcast for ASHA CEUs. For more information about us and CEUs, go over to our website, www.slpnerdcast.com. SLP Nerdcast is brought to you by listeners like you. Even small contributions keep our CEU prices low and our program ad-free. You can contribute on our website by clicking Support Our Work. On our site, you can also find permanent products, notes, and other handouts. Some items are free, others are not, but everything is always affordable. Visit our website to submit a call for papers to come on the show and present with us, or contact us anytime on Facebook, Instagram, or at info@slpnerdcast.com. We love hearing from our listeners, and we can't wait to learn what you have to teach us.
Just a quick disclaimer, the contents of this episode are not meant to replace clinical advice. SLP Nerdcast, its hosts, and guests do not represent or endorse specific products or procedures mentioned during our episodes unless otherwise stated. We are not PhDs, but we do research our material. We do our best to provide a thorough review and a fair representation of each topic that we tackle. That being said, it's always likely that there's an article that we've missed or another perspective that we haven't shared. If you have something to add to the conversation, please email us. We love hearing from you.
We are so excited for today's topic. This is something we talk about a lot, and we are so excited to welcome Rose Griffin. Welcome, Rose.
Thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be here.
Rose, you are here to talk about leisure skills for older students. But before we get started, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. I am a speech language pathologist, and I am also a board certified behavior analyst. And I have split my time between a public school and, before I started my own business, a non-public school program for students with autism. And so I've really always focused on how to help support learners who have autism. That's really where my passion lies. And then from that passion, I created a business called ABA Speech. And oh man, I've had so much fun with that business doing all kinds of things. I have a blog, and I've also started my own podcast called Autism Outreach and created physical products and digital products, you name it, we have it. And it's all about autism and communication. And that has kept me very, very busy. The other thing that we do is I also have another company called Supervision Academy, and we help provide remote supervision to people who are becoming board certified behavior analysts. And I really, really love that part of me where I can be a speech therapist, but that I can also utilize being a BCBA. And I obviously do a lot of group supervision where I talk about autism and communication. And I really just love being able to connect with so many different people in this online space.
And I mean, let's be honest for a second. I've been on your website. I have seen how many resources you have. You are a busy, busy lady.
Thank you. Yes, I love to create. I have a lot of ideas in my brain. There are a lot of to-do lists. I'm looking at them now in my home office. And I just try to think, how can I help parents, professionals work on communication skills? And I just try to make all those things come to fruition.
And what I love about the resources that you have is that there are lots of them, and they're really easy to access. Before we get started in the hot topic for today, is there anything that you want to tell our listeners about that they can cruise on over to and learn a little bit more?
Yeah, we definitely have one of the most popular things that we have on the website is an autism IEP goal bank. I think it can be overwhelming for professionals, parents to goal set for students who are nonverbal or early learners. And so if you go right over to abaspeech.org, that is a really nice free resource that will help you just kind of get your wheels turning about how you can help goal set for your students who are not yet communicating spontaneously on their own. And then the other thing that we're super proud of that I didn't even mention is that we too are an ASHA approved CE provider. And we have a course that's very popular among professionals and parents. It's called Help Me Find My Voice. And it's a 5-hour ASHA approved course that's all about how to help students with autism find their voice and how to help them increase their communication skills. So the thing that I try to do in my business is make sure that everything that I share is very actionable, meaning you could listen to it, you could watch it, and then you could do it with your own clients. And what's cool about that course too is we have a private Facebook page. So I go in live once a month and I'm there to kind of be a support coach guide through that information. So those are some things that people might find especially helpful.
That's awesome. And I love clinically actionable steps. That's also where we are parallel in that passion. That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for sharing all of that great information. I guess I'm going to hop right into our learning objectives and financial and non-financial disclosures. I will read them as quickly as possible. We do have people write in and ask us to skip this part. I can't. Asha makes me read it. So if this is annoying you, just skip ahead 15 seconds. Just kidding. Don't do that because then you can't get CEUs. You have to listen to it. Sorry. Okay, here we go. Learning objective number one. Participants will identify two assessment tools to use to identify leisure skill needs. Learning objective number two, participants will be able to describe a data collection method for leisure activities. Learning objective number three, participants will list five modified leisure activities. Disclosures, Rose Griffin Financial Disclosures. Rose is the founder of ABA Speech, LLC, and sells products, therapy services, and courses. Rose has no non-financial relationships to disclose. Kate, that's me. My financial relationships, I'm the owner and founder of Grand Bois Therapy and Consulting, LLC, and co-founder of SLP Nerdcast. My non-financial disclosures, I'm a member of ASHA Stig 12. I serve on the AAC Advisory Group for Massachusetts Advocates for Children. I'm also a member of the Berkshire Association for Behavior Analysis and Therapy, MassABA, the Association for Behavior Analysis International, and the corresponding Speech Pathology and Applied Behavior Analysis Special Interest Group.
Amy, that's me. My financial disclosures are that I'm an employee of a public school system and co-founder of SLP Nerdcast. My non-financial disclosures are that I am a member of ASHA Sig 12 and I serve on the AAC Advisory Committee for Massachusetts Advocates for Children. All right, it's out of the way. Now into the good stuff. Rose, can you start off by talking to us a little bit about the importance of leisure skills? Why should we be considering targeting these skills in the first place?
Absolutely. Leisure skills are so important for overall quality of life. And there's so much communication that happens in leisure. And I always try to think of my day. So my day is kind of interacting with my kids, going to work, so that vocational sense. And then the rest of my day is kind of leisure, right? What I'm doing, things that I love and enjoy. Some of those things might be individual leisure. Some of those things might be cooperative leisure. And I think a lot of the times we don't always think about this for our students, but I think it's very, very important because if you have limited leisure skills, you're going to have more less opportunities to engage with others. So you're not going to be practicing communication as much as others. And as a student gets older, there are less opportunities to engage and be a part of the community. And so I always try to think about my students because I do work, when I work in a school setting, I do work with students in middle school, high school. I'm always thinking, how is what I'm working on with my student right now in this session important for them across the lifespan? Because if I can't justify why it's important right now to work on it, there's no point in working on it. So I do things that are fun that we're going to talk about, like working on weightlifting with water bottles and walking around the building in the track, because that could generalize to working out at a gym. And there's so many communication-based activities that you think about going to the gym, you talk about to the person at the front desk, you talk to others in the class. There's so much communication that's embedded in these things that it's really important to think about.
Can we just high five 1,000 times over that point? Because I think so many of us as speech pathologists working in our speech therapy rooms or even in the classroom, you know, no matter how old your students are, lose sight of the functional application outside of our setting. And I think leisure, you're making such an incredible point about the importance of generalization of skill, which we all know, but how to do that, right? Especially if you don't have access to, you know, regular access to the parents or regular access to the home environment. I love the idea of using leisure skills for that generalization piece. That's awesome.
I think another really great point that you made was regarding just the overall quality of life. Like, yes, there's the communication component. We want to work on the speech and language, but we want to work on it in a way that's going to increase our clients' quality of life, not just right now, but in the future. And when you are able to connect with things that are meaningful, that's going to also help make those communication targets much more authentic. When I think about what I do on my leisure time, it's different from what other people might do on their leisure time. And I should have the autonomy to make those choices. And so I think looking at that from a speech and language lens is a really great perspective.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that I really love to do with the kids, and I know we'll talk about specific activities, but is yoga. So I look at that and I think to myself, okay, we're working on following directions. We're working on doing this together as a cooperative activity. But really what it was so poignant, because when COVID started, I started seeing all my kids, like the rest of us, through teletherapy. And for us to be able to do that familiar activity together and for the parents to be able to see it, it was really cool. I was like, oh my gosh, this is like such a sad time and we're nervous and we don't know what's going on with the world. But this activity is very familiar. The kids know how to do it. And I always think about how can my kids access the community? So I work in a district where pre-COVID, we were able to take some community-based outings and they were pretty often like weekly. Feel very fortunate to be able to say that. But my kids then could potentially go to a yoga studio. That could be a community-based outing. So it's this kind of full circle moment. Those are the kind of things that I really love, is making sure that what I'm doing for my students is functional, even though you may think like, oh, well, how can I incorporate this into my speech therapy activity? Why is this important? Well, it's important because you want your learner to be able to communicate across environments. And if this isn't across environments, and being able to generalize skills, you know, I don't know what is. And it's just fun. It makes therapy fun and functional, which I think is really important too.
All the high fives.
Yes. Thank you very much. So yeah, I mean, I think too, you know, what where speech therapists may have trouble with thinking about how do we get started with this? Like, I definitely know that we all have students who are probably struggling or have very limited things that they love and enjoy. And so I think even just kind of exposing students to these different opportunities is really, really important. And so some of the things that we do as far as assessment, well, how do we know if our student is somebody who's going to be a good candidate for this type of therapy? And I don't know if on the podcast you guys have talked about the AFLS, the Assessment of Functional Living Skills, but this is a really nice assessment that I do in conjunction with my intervention specialist or special education teacher. And so she is well versed in this and I am too. And so sometimes for evaluations, we may work on different pieces and parts, but it's nice because it looks at a variety of skills. So it looks at community skills. It looks at, it has a whole leisure section, which is really, really nice. I think that we all are probably including some type of observation component in our testing in the schools and clinic settings, but sometimes we may miss that this might be an area of weakness, but I know that we all have students who are very limited in what they love and enjoy, maybe are very limited in what they do outside of the school environment. And so I think that's how it's nice to kind of look at this from that assessment. How can this assessment drive our intervention? And some of the leisure items that are talked about on the AFLS are, does a student look at books or magazines? And you may be thinking like, well, how is that applicable for a speech therapy session? But we had a group where we actually would take our students to the library. It was in the same parking lot as the school that I worked in. So it was this amazing activity that I did. And actually, it was so cool. I was up for tenure in a public school and I had my director observe this particular lesson, which was really cool because I was passionate about it. But what we did is we had the students look at a video model about how to check out a book or how to check out magazines from the library. And so it was this whole thing where we did a video model. I had a grad student at the time and I taped her checking out a book. And then I showed it to the students. We would go over to the library and there's so many nuanced communication-based things that happen when you just go anywhere, right, in the community. So, you know, you go in the community, where do you put your coat? You're looking for books, you know, that you want. How do you find them? Going to check out, waiting in line, you know, making small talk. So it was really, really cool. And we've done that too in the school setting where we've gone to the library to look at magazines. And I think the teacher that I was working with at the time thought I was crazy, but I'm like, no, this is what people do. If you really watch kids that are teens nowadays, they just kind of get together in a group and get on their phones, right? And send each other TikToks and all the things. And they're really not communicating verbally, but they're together in that space. So it's important. Yeah.
And I think one of the things that that you said that I loved is how many communication opportunities there are in these kinds of activities. And I think as speech pathologists, you know, often these kinds of things might be left to another profession. So in some of the settings where I am, there is vocational staff, or there, you know, in terms of the community outing and functional skill, or maybe to the OT in terms of, you know, occupations of daily living. But I do think that these are missed opportunities because there are so many communication opportunities when you are engaging in leisure, especially, and I love the term cooperative leisure, which I've never heard before, but it's so true.
Yes. Yes. There's so many different opportunities. I mean, I had a student once in a non-public program where we had a goal for him that he would just go with his iPad and he would just kind of be around others. And this idea of when we talk about younger students, we talk about parallel play, but for older students, that kind of simulated hanging out, just being with other people, enjoying something that you already enjoy. If we really analyze how kids at that age are socializing, this is like really what they do. So I always try to make it like real world. Some other items that it looks at on this assessment is, you know, does the student listen to music? Do they play board games? Do they play, games on their iPad? Do they enjoy activities with a variety of partners? I mean, if we are all thinking about students that we're working with, we know that our students are probably struggling. And another item on the APLES is, does the student hang out with peers? Because I think that's what's so important. It's like, gone are these days where we have these very contrived social situations where I always cringe, and I haven't seen it in a long time, but you know, where we're saying my turn, your turn. It's like, well, kids don't really socialize like that. That is not functional language. Like, one of the things I would do at my non-public program is I had a student who definitely needed to be there in a behavioral sense because he had behavioral barriers, but his language per se was within average level. And I would interact with him with a game, and I would just almost, I don't want to say a language sample because it was really just me writing down kind of verbatim what he said. So it wasn't really analyzed the way that a real true language sample would be done, but I did write down what this student said. And then if I tried to, you know, expose my student with more limited language to how they could potentially comment during this leisure activity, I was taking that real verbiage that the student used, and that's what I was using. Because I think sometimes we get into these contrived situations where we're like trying to force language that nobody's really using anyway, you know, during the activity. So, yeah.
And then, you know, I feel like, especially if your student has an issue with generalization, you're teaching, you know, these unnatural phrases in unnatural contexts, and then how do you generalize from there? I think it's such a good point.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just not going to be. And a lot of part of socializing and things, it's really kind of nonverbal. The other assessment, if you're not so familiar with the AFLS, is the functional communication profile of the revised portion. This is something that I also use, and I feel like a lot of speech therapists are more familiar with this. And so I've been talking about it a lot more when I do my trainings, because most of us, even if we haven't used it, it's probably like in your therapy room somewhere. And it actually has some really good information. So there are a lot of areas that are addressed, but it does look at pragmatic language and social. So it has example items like, it looks at, does the student play with others? Do they make comments? Can they make a friend? That's kind of subjective, but are they doing turn-taking conversation? It can be a really good starting point. So if you're somebody who says like, gosh, yeah, I have students who really have a weakness in leisure skills, or this sounds like something great, this could be a really nice place to give you those items that you're going to work on to help you plan that scope and sequence for your intervention. And then I think the other thing that's so important is an observation. And we know that we can't just give standardized tests for our testing purposes, but I also know that as a school-based therapist, we're really strapped for time. So for observations, what I always try to do is go into any kind of unstructured time for my kids. So whether that be a gym time or lunch, oh my gosh, you can get such great information from lunch. You know, how is my student really applying their social skills, and really where does the deficit lie? Like you said, with generalization, like there's a lot of students who are okay with you in the therapy room, but then they're still struggling, right, to find a peer to engage with, even during a gym time or anything like that. And so those are the kind of students where you might say, you know what, this might be something really impactful for this student that's going to help them right now increase their communication skills, but is also going to help them across their lifespan. Because I think if you're listening and you work with older students, I'm always thinking, how is this going to benefit the student as an adult, because they're getting to be that age when they're in middle school and high school. And so it has to be really functional.
Well, and we've talked a bit on this podcast before about so the information that you can get from an observation, and it's information about the student, but it's also information about the environment, because all of those, you know, the expectations in gym class are really different from the expectations during lunch. And it might even be different from one gym teacher to a different, you know, PE teacher. So I feel like that information is also really helpful and helps you kind of avoid some of the pitfalls that are kind of like that my turn, your turn structured. You're working on something that's still not that relevant for that actual environment. It just helps you identify what those skills are for that individual student so much more.
Yes. Take a step back and observe. I think that's such a good thing to think about. So when you're thinking about, okay, we've done our assessment, now we're going to kind of goal set, I really kind of let the AFLs and the functional communication profile kind of drive that based on how the student is doing on those things. But some of the things that you may work on, it might be playing a structured game with some supports. I've had some students who are gathering items for group time to kind of be a leader and tell, the peers, like, it's time for group and getting everybody kind of ready. That idea of hanging out with peers, we kind of discuss that. Engaging in conversation with peers. Every single student, based on your assessment, is going to have a different skill that they're working on. Or, you know, working with a group in a group activity for a set duration of time. I know that I have a student right now that when I first met him in sixth grade, he really was regimented, and group had to start a certain time. If it didn't, and you know, I don't know, I'm always running like 2 minutes behind or getting something set up. That's my life story. Someone catches me in the hall to talk about an IEP that's due. You know how it goes. but you know, trying to just be flexible and working on that as a skill and kind of strengthening that. But now the student is able to do all different types of activities with different sets of learners in different configurations, and it's just been no problem. And so that's really been cool, because I kind of come from this idea of, I think it's Dr. Carbone, this idea of teaching loosely. So while I might be working on the same skills for students in a mixed group, I'm going to present the information differently. I'm going to have different activities. We might start a different way because I want to teach students to be more flexible, because I think that mirrors real life. You know what I mean? To be flexible. So I think that's very important. The other thing I think that people kind of need to think about, or people kind of struggle with, is, oh my gosh, how do I take data on
this
these
is our
different
jam.
Yes, I know it is. That's why we get along. I do love data. and I'm constantly kind of revising my group data, because I do a group every week for students. And every year it's kind of changed just based on the configuration of the students, what we're working on now with COVID. You know, I could go on and on. But thinking to yourself, you know, how are you going to take data on a group goal? And I think what's been so helpful for me is this idea of cold probe or discontinuous data collection, and it's or first trial data. So basically what I do for my students is I have a group data sheet where I can put what activities we worked on, what the date is, and then for each student might have one or two skills that we're targeting in the group. And then I just circle a plus or minus based on if I saw the student do that skill or if they needed a prompt. And I think that's really kind of helped me keep data in a way that doesn't take away from the activity, but that also gives me information that I can analyze to make future decisions about intervention. And so I think that's really important. Obviously, I love data. So that's really been helpful to me. But, you know, my groups do kind of have this same kind of vibe. So if you're thinking like, okay, well, I definitely have a group, Rose. How do you structure it? I always kind of start group with a group conversation. So I have been, since COVID started, I've been using boom cards. I make some at ABA Speech, but you know, I didn't know what a boom card was. I had no clue what it was, but it's actually a cool little thing. And so I'll bring up a conversation starter. And sometimes for the students, there might be different choices. So we might talk about, you know, what's a sport that you like, or what's something you like to do outside. And then everybody can come up and take a turn or ask a peer. And we try to make it very cooperative. I think the other thing to think about too, when you're planning a group, is trying to facilitate peer-to-peer interaction. Oftentimes we just have students in a group and they're just paying attention to us, which, you know, is okay for some students. But I think it's a little harder now with COVID. I've had to be flexible this year and that's been hard for me. But kind of facilitating how you can that peer-to-peer interaction, which can be a lot more difficult, right, to get our students to engage. But that's definitely kind of part of the plan. And then I'll introduce, either we'll do like an adapted book on this. I'm lucky enough to work in a place where it has smart boards. And so we'll do a smart board activity. And then we do a leisure activity. So sometimes I do a leisure activity where we watch a video model, which is the leisure skill where I'm role playing it, but I have a YouTube channel. So I've got some of these on here that I'm going to talk about today. And then after we watch the video, we practice it. We practice the leisure skill, which is really, really fun. And I usually have some paraprofessionals there. The teacher sometimes stays to provide that feedback and coaching. Some students may need more support with the certain things that we're working on. And so that is kind of how that looks for our students. And now I think what I want to segue into is just talking about some of the specific modified leisure activities that we work on. So this one and some of the ones that I'm going to talk about today, I have videos over on my YouTube channel, which is called ABA Speech. And I just made these really for my own students. And the students, when I was working at a non-public program, I would try to tell the, you know, the RBTs, like, okay, this is what we're working on. And I would want to share this video model with them. And I think just from that need, I started like a YouTube channel. So I have some of these. Thank you. So I have some of these on there. Because then it was also nice to be able to share it with parents. Like, hey, this is how we're playing this game. This is how this is looking. And then there's no like guessing about how we were working on it. So one of the things I like to work on is modified Scrabble. There are a lot of different ways that you can modify it. One of the things I do is I allow the students to make a word anywhere they want to on the board. I think this would be a nice modification for anybody. So the words don't have to touch. So it makes it just a little bit easier. For some students, I have them make a grammatically correct sentence after they put their word up. That's kind of the speech therapist in me trying to, like, you know, make it an extension activity and practice our language skills. But if a student has difficulty spelling, something that you could do to kind of foster that independence is write a word out on a dry erase board. So then we're working on matching the letter to the dry erase board and having them find the tiles. If you think about all the different work that goes into that, it's actually quite a lot. And then they're playing it with friends. So that idea of doing something cooperatively that you could also generalize to, you know, the home environment. A lot of people have Scrabble.
I was just about to say, what I love about this example is that you're using materials. You're not using like arbitrary tiles or arbitrary pictures that you laminated. You're using materials that the student is likely to encounter on vacation, in their home, at their grandparents' house, at their aunt's house, wherever they go. Well, not that Scrabble is everywhere, but you know what I'm saying. So they may see this board game and be at least familiar with it or pick it up or be interested in playing with the tiles. I mean, just having that, those materials have continuity from setting to setting, I think is huge. I'm never going to use printed letter tiles again for the rest of my clinical life.
There you go. Scrabble all the way.
We're done here.
The thing that I think is so important too, just because I am a parent of three kids, I'm typical developing children, but the one thing that I really feel for parents, especially parents of older students who are autistic, is that sometimes you're kind of at a loss for things that you can do together for shared enjoyment. And I think from a parental perspective, I had this student who we were playing, it was a different game, but it was Connect Four, but it's the same kind of idea. And I saw this student in the non-public program. And then I also saw him for outpatient. He got a lot of me, but it was nice because I got to see his parent. And, you know, I taught this particular student how to play modified Connect Four. And all we did for that was he chose which color he wanted. And then we just took turns putting in the colors and we filled up the board. And that was how we played it. That was his skill level. And that was how we played turn-taking, cooperative activity, engagement of task. And I was able to share that with his mom. And she was said, oh my gosh, I'm so glad that you talked to me about that and showed me how you were playing. I was able to buy that for so-and-so for Christmas, and he played it with his cousin and he played it with his sister. And I thought, wow, that's really, really special. That made my heart feel very happy, because I know sometimes parents really struggle, especially when you have a child who has a more severe disability. It can be hard to know how to make those times really special, like Hanukkah or Christmas or birthdays. So thinking that too, we as speech therapists, sometimes I feel like we're so like, oh my gosh, you know, like, every day in the trenches, working on these skills, baby steps. We appreciate all that. But what you're working on with your students, especially when you're working on leisure skills, what you do in that session every day is not just affecting that student in your therapy room or in that immediate environment, but it's going to generalize to time that they spend with peers, to time that they spend in the community, to time and shared activities that they have in the home environment. And that, I think, is super powerful. And that's why I think it's so great to work on these things. Another game that I really love is Uno, modified Uno. And I think this is a really nice, easy game that you can modify for a lot of students. And what I do for most of my students, you can do it two different ways. So one of the things you can do is you can just take out all the extra cards, meaning the reverse, the skip, the draw to. If your students are at that level. If you have students who are more impaired, who are maybe just working on scanning and actually picking up a card on their own and things like that, is that you can just put out a blue card, a yellow card, a red card, a green card on the table, and then the students pick from a pile and then they match it. And you can make it COVID friendly too, even if we're thinking about that next school year, is everybody could have their own little pile of cards so we wouldn't have to cross contaminate. I'm always trying to think flexibly because I think this is going to be something that stays with us for this upcoming school year. But it's still a really nice game that's around. And the cool story I have about this, the non-public program that I worked in for so long before I got too busy with my own business, they were taking pictures. We had a new building and they were taking pictures of students like just engaged throughout the day. And one of the pictures that they blew up and put in their center was four students that I didn't even work with. They weren't on my caseload, but they were playing Uno in the way that I had modified it for other students. And I was like, oh my gosh, how cool.
I love that.
Thank you. Yes. I was like, this is great. This is like the ultimate generalization where these weren't even my students, but that's why I kind of like the non-public program. I would have a lot of support during my sessions, but when you have that support, you're modeling for other professionals. These are things that you can do to embed communication across the student's day, which can be hard for people to realize that everything is communication, especially for students who have more complex needs.
And, you know, we say this at every single episode that we record, and it's making me think of the need for indirect service. So indirect service as a service delivery model is something that is really underutilized in our field, particularly because there's no CPT code for it. There's no funding right for it. But even in the school setting, I think this concept of direct service is like, you know, considered the quote unquote gold standard. But those indirect service moments where you are able to talk with the teacher, to observe the peers, to talk with the other people on the team and say, oh, OT, we just did this great, you know, this student is really engaged with Connect Four in our sessions. And, you know, just those connections between professionals is incredibly valuable and something that we just don't get to see enough of.
Well, not to mention the connection with the parents, you know, in that
Yes.
example with the Connect Four, that's also an indirect service, and it's so valuable. Yes, obviously we share the soapbox, so.
Yes, no. And you know, something I even did when I was working in the non-public program, which the funder was the local school district, is I wrote in there for one particular student, the Connect Four student, is that I would meet with somebody from his team, either his main one-on-one person or the teacher, to talk about his communication and generalization. And it was actually a funded half hour per month because everything I do is collaborative and I always try to have people involved, but this particular student had some things going on that I knew that I had to have it on the IEP and I knew that I need to make it a priority. So depending on what your funding source is, I think that's very, very important. But I do some SLP BCBA mentorship, and somebody was telling me that in their state, with the insurance that they have, that they do get funding for providing parent training. So this particular person that I provide some consultation with has students who are getting ABA and speech services and OT, and also within that they are able to provide parent training, and it is something that is covered by insurance. So it's a big part of their program. So it's going to depend on where you're at, but absolutely, I think that's very, very important, because I always say the real power is what happens outside of the therapy room, especially for older students. I maybe have one or two students that I see in the therapy room, and it's usually a student who is stuttering or something that's very specific, because therapy and communication, especially for older students, it really happens outside of the therapy room. It does not happen in my small speech therapy office.
10,000 high fives. There's just so many. This is gold. Keep talking.
Thank you. So another this is one of my products, a disclaimer. It's called Double Up, but I created this because I'm telling you what, when you work with older students, there is just a lack of great materials out there for them. And so I've just started creating my own. And so this Double Up game was created because I was working with a lot of students who were very early learners in the sense of their skill set. So they were students who were working on matching. They were students who were working on functional vocabulary. And so there was just nothing out there that I could work on with my students. It was like, okay, we did modified Uno. Like, what are we going to do now? Nothing is at their level that they would be successful with. And so I created Double Up. It's a four-person player game. And what's so cool about it is that you can match either picture to picture. So there's leisure nouns, leisure actions, or there's hygiene nouns, hygiene actions, which is so important for students at that age range. And so you can pick up a card and ask a student, do you have this? Or if your student is nonverbal or not communicating that way, they could just pass it to a person in their class that has it. Or if you have students at a higher language level, you could have them pick up a picture of basketball, but then their game board would be a person playing basketball. And so
Ooh.
you can really, yeah, it's really great. My students love to play it. And so it's really, really been nice. And a lot of people, life skills teachers like it, speech therapists who are working with older students, because oftentimes either age respectful choices are not out there, what we're working for our students, especially students who might be at a language level that is considered more of an early learner language level, where they're working on matching and things like that. And I think sometimes when we're working with early learners, you know, we have some students that are just going to work on matching, and that's going to be the skill set that they're at. And I think that's okay. And so we want to make sure that they have opportunities to practice these skills in a way where they're getting exposed to this great vocabulary, but that they're also practicing doing this or with other peers too. So I love that game. The grocery store game, I don't know if you guys, I'll be interested if you guys have ever heard of this. I think I just made this game up, or I learned about it in grad school, but I've been rocking this game, you know, for 20 years now. But anyway, I call it the grocery store game. And why I like it, this is a fun game to play with one student or a group. And what I do is I just write at the top of the page, you know, I went to the store and I bought. And so the students can just fill in the blank. And what you do is you just go through the alphabet. So for some students, I might just do a portion of the alphabet. If I'm doing it with a group of students who can attend to task for the entire alphabet, we might do the entire alphabet. It's nice because each student gets a turn to play the game. But what I've done in subsequent years is I've actually created, if you go to abaspeech.org, I have, and I could even send the show, the link for your show notes, but I have a PowerPoint that goes through and has a visual prompt for each letter of the alphabet. And that's nice because you just never know. You're going to typically in a school be doing a mixed group. So for students who have varying language abilities. And so I wanted everybody to feel really comfortable participating in this super fun group activity. And so I work at a place where I have my iPad. So my district iPad. So I would just pull this PowerPoint up on my iPad and I just have my iPad ready should somebody need a prompt. Some students don't and other students do. So I want to make sure that I have that readily available. And this is like a game I play with my kids in the car on a vacation. So
awesome.
Yeah. So it's super, super fun. And I've made that PowerPoint, which makes it really nice and fun for students too.
And we will definitely link everything in the show notes.
Oh, great. Perfect. I love that. Another leisure skill that I really like, this is more for individual leisure, but I think that, you know, I've had students in the past where they just have very limited things that they love and enjoy. And any kind of unstructured or downtime is very, very hard for them. And I know that we can all think of students who really struggle with that kind of downtime, which really, if we're thinking about real life, there's downtime right now. We as adults, I mean, I know that a lot of people in this age group are going to struggle with interacting with others in real life because anytime there's downtime, Starbucks line, Target line, people don't interact with each other anymore. Oftentimes they just whip their phone out. And I've had to put myself on a behavior plan for social media time.
I'm not As you're lie. Saying this, I'm like, oh God, now I need to stop looking at my phone. You're right.
Analyze when you're doing it. But I remember being at a work party once. It was a holiday party and there was somebody who was at a table and then all these people left and he was by himself. And then I could just see like, you know, I'm assuming maybe he felt anxious or he was bored, but as soon as he was alone, then he whipped his phone out, even when other people came up to the table. And I think it's something that we do often. So I don't know. I like communicating in real life. So if you guys ever see me in real life, please say hi, because I will say hi back. So this app, these are apps that I learned about doing during extended school year for a student, and I love them. So they're called Help Kids Learn. And why I really love these apps, they're free, and they have paid ones as well, but they tell a story. So there's ones about going to the vending machine, one about getting money at the ATM, self-checkout at the grocery store. There's one with a girl in a wheelchair enjoying a sensory room. They're very real life, like opportunities that our students would potentially be in. And you can touch anywhere on the screen to advance the app. And that's why I love it, because I worked with this one student who I talk about in some of my trainings, and he was not able to point. He didn't have a good point and was nonverbal when I first met him. So I worked with the OT and we shaped up a point for him over months and months and months. But what was cool about this, and this particular student liked these apps, but he was able to access these apps whether he touched, you know, anywhere on the screen. You don't have to touch in this very minute place where the red arrow is. And I think a lot of our students that we're seeing might have these motoric issues too. So if you have anybody that has that, this Help Kids Learn was nice. And something that I used to do for my groups is I would have my district iPad and I would bring up the Help Kids Learn app. And then I would let the students take turns advancing a slide. And it was really, really fun. And it was just another way to engage in a cooperative activity together. So if you haven't checked those out, I suggest that you do.
We will put the link for that in our show notes as well.
Wonderful. The other activity, I've got a lot of links to share. The other activity that I really love because, and I'm not a yogi by any stretch of the imagination. I only know the poses that, you know, I've done in a workout class or that, you know, I've done in my speech therapy groups. But I really think there's a lot of power in yoga because yoga, at least where I live, there are a lot of different yoga studios. You can also access a lot of yoga videos online that are completely free. And I don't know if you guys have ever done Cosmic Kids Yoga, but that's a really cool YouTube channel too. She has a lot of kid-friendly yoga poses. I like this Yogarilla. It's from Super Duper. It's a really cute little activity. But what's nice about the yoga is what I would do is I do have a smart board. So if we were doing this leisure activity at the end of a group session, I would find a YouTube channel that has meditation music. There's YouTube channels that have all this meditation music that's just streaming 24/7. We kind of dim the lights. Somebody turns the lights off. That's somebody's job. And then I would do a yoga pose. I would show the students the yoga pose, and then we would hold the yoga pose together and we would count. In the school, in the non-public setting, we would have students who had yoga mats, and that was part of them getting the yoga mat, you know, unfolding it. In a school system, I only do standing poses. It just seems easier that way. So you have to kind of adjust based on your environment. But I think yoga is really nice because I think it's something you can do as a shared activity in the community. And I think it's a shared activity you can do with family and friends too.
So what I love about this so much is not only are you engaging in an activity that they will see outside of your therapy room, but this is also so much more fun than drills and sitting at a desk and following directions or, you know, doing something that really feels like work. I feel like if you're with another group of students and you're laying out a yoga, I mean, there is some, maybe it's just because it's yoga and I'm immediately feeling a little bit more like relaxed and happy just thinking about doing that activity. But something about that just sounds very engaging in a natural, holistic, fun way.
Yes, it's fun. I mean, I think this is part of, you know, like I just really, it's fun. This makes therapy fun again. I think sometimes, you know, especially towards the end of a school year or if you've been working with, based on how big your district is, you know, sometimes you work with students and maybe you meet them in sixth grade and you have them until you're 22. And, you know that student still needs support. And, you know, I'm part of a couple of Facebook pages, Facebook groups that are dedicated just to middle school, high school. And a lot of the times, you know, we're like, these students still need opportunities to practice different skills. How do we make these things functional? Or what do you work on? And that's definitely my jam. I love to talk about, you know, how do we support our students who are older learners? Because I think oftentimes it's hard to know how to support them. And so I think these are hopefully ideas that you guys will love and utilize. Another idea I love is working on lifting weights, but with water bottles. So I don't know if you guys have ever tried this. I had a blog all about this. And I don't know if I came across this. I think I came across just some, I think it was maybe from Unique Curriculum. They had like these pictures. I was doing some shared groups with the OT and they had these pictures of these kids and they were lifting water bottles. And me and the OT, we just ran with this.
This is awesome. I'm just imagining how I want to be in your groups. This is so fun.
Oh my gosh. It was really fun. We had this vocational group, then we ended it with leisure. And so we did it with water bottles. You think about all the different language now with COVID, the kids have their own water bottles in a plastic bag, in a larger plastic bin. And we're actually doing this group activity right now in my sessions. But, you know, I call the kids up by name. They come and get their bag. They have to take it to their desk. They take follow directions to take them out. If you think about all that language right there, I mean, for some students, that's like really complex. And then now this is a part of me that, you know, I really kind of in another life wanted to be a fitness instructor. So maybe this is just me kind of living that out. I don't know. But I really did think I wanted to do that. So this is my moment to shine, I guess. So during group therapy, this is what we do. And it's really funny because I was in an IP meeting like last month. I think I was talking with a parent. I was like, oh, you know, right now we're working on a leisure skill. We're working on lifting weights, but they're water bottles because I know that once the kids transition to the high school where I work, they have a class called personal fitness and they get to lift weights. And it's like so cool because it simulates the gym and that's a part of real life. And I love that. And the gym teacher, who's the nicest person in the world, emailed me after the IEP meeting. He was like, hey, we have weights. If you want to use them, let me know.
Instead of your water bottle. Yes.
Which I think is so cute because we'll generalize to that, right? Like really with my students, I want to make sure they feel comfortable with this and that they like it. You know, like we're not going to work on a leisure skill. I'll introduce these leisure skills, but if I have a group of students that like really don't like this, we're not going to work on it anymore because it is supposed to be fun and it's supposed to be enjoyable. Right.
It's like counterintuitive to being a leisure skill. If you hate it, it's not a leisure skill.
Exactly.
Well, and it makes me think about the difference between, like, you've given so many great ideas here, and I feel like there's the leisure sampling. I don't know if that's a real word, yes. But like try these different activities, try them a few times to see if you like them. I mean, it's just like all of us who are trying to fill this time in COVID, like what are some other activities I could do that I might like? I'll try these activities a few times. Maybe I like them. Maybe I don't. The things that you like are those things that can transition into being an actual legitimate leisure skill. I also feel like you have a nice blend between things that are sort of seated with another person activities and things that engage your body. And I think that that's also an interesting thing just to think of that I don't think that I've really given explicit thought to before. But because a lot of what I think of, I guess, about leisure activities are kind of sedentary tasks. But the idea of yoga, the idea of lifting weights, like those can be leisure activities too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just always try to think about my students being a part of the community. I don't know if you guys have ever been out in the community and you see somebody using an AAC device and I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe it. This is amazing. This person's speech therapist must be so proud. Like to see our students generalizing and a part of the community, like that always lights me up. You know what I mean? So I think we need to think of that. Like how is what I'm doing with a student right now in this speech therapy session going to serve them across the lifespan? You know, when I was working in a non-public program and just starting out, you know, I sat in a lot of contentious meetings with SPED directors asking like, okay, well, why are you working on this? And why is this, yes. Why are you playing kickball? Why is this important? And here I am 23, just super passionate about helping autistic kids, you know, knowing the answers. But I think that really kind of gave me a good skill set of being able to say like, this is important. And this is why, just like you said, we can mm-hmm. sit and we can drill and we can work on skills a variety of different ways, but we know that we need to embed communication within these functional routines, I would say. Yeah.
Well, and I think asking the question of why is critical. And you know, there is nothing more mind-boggling than either catching myself doing it or you know, one of my mentees, or I do a lot of consulting, coming into a team, and they have this, they're working on the right skill with these arbitrary materials or in this arbitrary way, and just say, well, why? What is the end goal? What do you want this kid to do when they're 45? Thinking long term, what is the, you know, what are the breadcrumbs that you're going to drop instead of just randomly doing it at a desk with a handful of pre-made materials and then being done with it because they can do it at the desk, you know? I think, and I just love the idea of using these already, you know, these materials and activities that are already embedded in the lives of their family and community. It's so great.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what's so fun to work on these is like thinking of the lifespan of a leisure skill. So yeah, we might be working, starting with water bottles, but then we're going to generalize it to walking down to the gym and picking up our weights and taking them back to the classroom and, you know, working on this activity together. And then when the students go to high school, they'll be doing it within their gym class. And then they'll have opportunities to do community-based instruction where they go to a gym in our local community and they have gym time. And so I think just being able to see how functional and fun these things are, that you can share this progress with families where it could really kind of expose the families to other things. Because what I have found too, is sometimes when you have an autistic child and your child gets older, there are, you know, sometimes there are less opportunities to engage in the community, to be a part of the community. And so I know that, you know, as parents, we're always kind of thinking of ways that we can get our students, our own children involved. And so I think this is really kind of a nice way to think about that. So that is lifting weights. Oh, and music. And music is another fun thing that I have done for groups. So I had our tech guy add Spotify and Pandora to some of the classroom iPads. And then I would make like a very simple, just Google slide about different genres of music. Like in some of the students, when I worked on this, these were students that really loved and enjoyed music and they had like some very specific interests like Broadway and hip hop and things like that. And so I would go over it and I would make a PowerPoint like, this is country music, this is Garth Brooks. It was swayed towards probably the artist that I liked in that genre, but we would go over it and then we would listen to different music from that genre and we would vote, like, did we like it? Did we not like it? The student that we each took turns, the student would have a turn getting on Spotify and looking up a song that they enjoyed or they wanted to listen to on that particular day, and whether that meant they typed it in or whatever. So we were encompassing all these different skills and we were doing it cooperatively together. And that was really, really fun because that's something that we all do for our students. So I think that's what's so important to think about is kind of that real life. Like, how does this parallel real life? I work in an amazing district where we have a group called Council for Exceptional Children. Does your school have this? This is something to think about. And what it was great for reverse inclusion. So it was students who had disabilities and it was typical peers. And then we would do certain things throughout the year together. So whether that meant we just did something in the school environment, or we would go to the zoo, or we would go to Chick-fil-A. These were nice opportunities for both students to be able to engage in these shared activities. Another thing, you know, every high school is going to be different, but I love high school because there's just so many things that you can do in a high school. And so one of the things we have in our high school is a school restaurant. Oh my gosh, this is like amazing, right? We don't even have to leave the building.
That's very cool.
That is yeah. Awesome.
Yes, it is the coolest. And so we can, I mean, there's a hostess, you know, you can make a reservation. You have to make a reservation actually.
That's amazing.
Yes. So we would go out, there's a menu, you know, you could prep students ahead of time about that. They order their food, like, very independent. I mean, I know some typical kids that are in high school that probably want their parents to order from them. I mean, shoot, I might have been that person too. I was actually an introvert growing up, believe it or not. So just kind of thinking too, and kind of having your detective hat on, like, what opportunities do you already have in your building that lend itself to working on these leisure, you know? Is there a school store? Like, our student council used to run a school store. So that was like another way for students to work on things. My school is really it's more of a campus. So there's a track that's close by. So working on, you know, walking together as a group. These are all really functional things that we do in real life that all have different communication-based activities embedded. We've done things like going to get ice cream. So if you're lucky enough to be able to do these things like community-based outings, I always try to, in my district, it was kind of nice. Like, I wouldn't have to go on the entire field trip because as a school-based therapist, I would be missing other people's sessions. So I would kind of go out, see how everybody was doing, provide some feedback and coaching, you know, but some of my sessions prior to going to get ice cream was we would have menus. The students were going to practice with their device or their language, what they were going to order. Then we go to the ice cream place. The students practice that skill as such as ordering. We're sitting in a group having ice cream together. For some students, that's really hard, just that duration of task of being together. And then what I would do, obviously with parent permission, is I would take pictures of the students on these community-based outings. And then the next speech therapy session, I would use those pictures either in individual sessions to work on those narrative skills of retelling, or we would do a whole group lesson where, okay, here's the picture and you come up with the sentence. And, you know, you can just do so many things with that, but those pictures are so nice to have for the students because they love to look back on those times to be able to talk about them. So, you know, I think the life of a leisure skill, if you're not using leisure skills right now in your sessions and you're working with students in middle school and high school, to start thinking about it. Do you have students who, you know, have delays in social skills? Because I know we've been talking a lot now about social skills and really analyzing, you know, why are we working on this social skill? Why is this important for this person? I always try to frame social skills with, you know, it goes hand in hand with leisure, but I always try to tell people, you know, you don't have to really be engaged in a conversation, but when you get to have competitive employment, these are things that are very important. Engaging in small talk, maybe, you know, doing some type of leisure skill with coworkers. These are all things that we kind of are like, but we know that this is a part of being an adult. So we don't want to change anybody. We just want to provide them with support that they need. And so if you're working on quote unquote social skills, try to think of it within this way. How do we frame it? Whenever I'm working on social skills, either I'm talking to the parent, the student with autism, or the team and saying like, this is why this is important. You know, with one, some students I work on like this idea of the social fake, which comes from Michelle Garcia Winner, but I was telling my student like, hey, I do this all the time. I get in conversations all the time as an adult about stuff that I really don't care about, right? I mean, I think if we analyze what we do across the day is like most of the times we're kind of like, eh, I don't really want to talk about this, but we know that that's important to engage as an adult. Those things are going to be important. So if you're working on traditional leisure skills or if you're working with students in middle school and high school, think about how you can incorporate leisure skills. You would start out with your assessment, notice what the deficit is, do that observation, potentially work on that social skill or that leisure skill with the speech therapist, either individually or in a group setting, generalize it to working on it with other peers and other different groups, report specifically about it on progress notes, however that is for your setting, either clinical or an educational setting, talk about it exactly. Feel free to use my ABA Speech YouTube channel if you're doing video modeling and don't want to recreate the wheel for some of these things. And then if you're fortunate enough to be able to take these types of community-based outings, you know, try to kind of chain backward like, oh, we're going to go to a yoga studio. Oh, we're going to go to the mall. Okay, what do you do at the mall? You walk, you look at stuff. Okay, let's practice that here in this setting or going to the library. So thinking about how to break it up so that it's important for your student. And it can really just be such a great lifelong skill for our students. And it really all starts, you know, in the therapy room and obviously making sure that you have ongoing communication with the team. And, you know, that's kind of the gold standard if you're listening to me and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm not doing any of this. And this seems really complicated, but it sounds really fun. Just thinking about how could you incorporate one of these things with your students, you know, and just seeing how it goes.
I can't, this was so much information. This is so much great information. I thank you so much for all of this. I can't believe that you just talked almost nonstop this whole time, just like full of ideas and full of information. This was really so great. Okay. And you know, everybody who is listening, we are going to have all of these resources in our show notes. I was taking notes the whole time you were talking in terms of your YouTube channel, the PowerPoint that you have available, the Help Kids Learn app, the Yogarilla Super Duper Activities, all of the things that you mentioned will all be in our show notes so people can quickly start applying these things after they've listened to this episode, which is great. Before we wrap up, is there anything that you want to leave, any gems of wisdom that you want to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, just to make sure you, if you try any of these things, hit me up on Instagram, ABA Speech by Rose over there. I would love to hear about it. And I always try to share what's going on in my therapy room over on that social media platform. So make sure that you visit me there. And I would love to hear how you're implementing these things.
She's really nice. She writes you back. I know firsthand experience.
So I love,
if you
a
have a question. And you know, if anybody has any questions for us in terms of the CEUs or any questions at all, feel free to email us at any time, info@slpnerdcast.com. As we mentioned in the beginning of this episode, you can use this episode for Asha's CEUs. Cruise on over to our website to check out and take the quiz. And Rose, thank you again so much for joining
us. Thank you so much.
Yes, it was great to meet you, Amy. And thanks for having me, guys.